Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white, drink blue and light. And don't forget to try the new Labatt Blue Light Seltzer Variety Pack, available at retailers throughout Pennsylvania.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three, and that means it's time to Ask Greg. I'm Jim Galante, along with Greg Pickle. And this is where we have Greg answer your Penn State football or recruiting questions. If you want to submit a question, you can download our app from the App Store. Just search on Keystone Sports. Or if you prefer, you could email us at info@ksnsports.net. After the segment, we will select the best question. And Greg, we will give the winner a great package courtesy of thetailgateclub.com. They have the great barbecue sauces from 409 Tailgate. I know you're familiar with those, and many other great products like their bacon ketchup and sweet banana pepper mustard. All great stuff as we're going into cookout season. Greg, are you ready for the questions?
I am, Jim, and I'm ready for you to remember to announce the winner coming up next. We'll see if we can get it right this week.
Last week, I had to save at the end of the segment, just kind of snuck it in there at the end. We'll try to do it at the top of the segment this go-round. Let's start with Kevin from Milwaukee. Kevin says, hey, Greg, love the show. I've read and heard throughout the Penn State beat that Arnold Ibikiti and Nick Tarburton really flashed and made multiple plays on Saturday. Of course, that's great to hear, but not for the offensive line. I understand the first-team offense had reserve guards playing, but Ibikiti and Tarburton are ends, and I presume they were operating against the tackles Rasheed Walker and Caden Wallace. Were they, meaning Walker and Wallace, getting consistently beat, and how did they look overall to you?
Yeah, I thought that, you know, one of the things that's important to remember, I'm glad we start with this question, because it is important to remember that when it's spring, you're talking about spring practice, when a guy does something really well on one side of the ball, probably means somebody else didn't do so great on, that he was going against, and let's not forget that they're teammates. So, you know, that's the thing kind of with Kalen King. I know that's not where this question was necessarily meant to go, but let's start there. I mean, it's great that Kalen King's been such a dominant playmaker, but why has he been given so many opportunities to intercept passes? That's the question you have to ask yourself, and which quarterbacks are the ones that have been throwing it the most to him and why? So, you know, that's obviously, you know, whenever for every action, there's a reaction, right? And we have to ask ourselves why. How is that action outweighing the reaction in terms of the negative side of whatever is happening? So, yeah, in this case, I mean, there were a couple of times that Ibikiti, I don't know how we'll have to get that figured out, Jim. Maybe I can pull up the pronunciation guide while I'm talking here. But there were a couple of times he just straight beat Caden Wallace off the line. I mean, and there were also a couple of times when Caden Wallace just planted his feet and said, no, sir, you are not going around me. And, you know, Nick Tarburton, I think most of his success may have come against a second team tackle. I don't 100% recall. But, you know, both of those guys look good. I mean, I guess the main takeaway to me, Jim, is that, you know, they looked like they belonged out there. Obviously, Ibikiti is a former second team all AAC pick, so he has experience at this level. He's proven that he can play in college. Tarburton has had injuries, so that's kind of held him back a bit. But yeah, I would not, I guess my takeaway would be this. Unlike some other areas of the practice scrimmage, whatever we're calling it, I didn't come away concerned about the offensive line just because there was times when the defensive line had success. You know, there were instances where, I mean, I'll be honest, the defensive line got the upper hand of the offensive line. There's no question about that. But some of those results came, I think, as a direct cause of decisions that were made by other members of the offense that put the offensive line in a pretty bad spot. So I think that's important to keep in mind as well, Jim.
In other words, do not panic about the offensive tackles because the defensive ends played well.
Exactly. I'm nowhere near that point at this point. I think Caden Wallace is going to be great. I think Rasheed Walker is going to develop into a first-round caliber tackle, and I would not worry about one practice's results changing any of that.
All right, let's go next to Jared in Talmadge, Ohio. Jared is interesting here. He says, Greg, the past 2 weeks, my questions have led to long, in-depth discussions, but I took the L both times. I've scoured my brain in an attempt to get into the winner's circle. Just as a quick aside, this is me talking now, not Jared. Begging is okay. We'll allow Jared to beg for the to be a winner. And here's his question. Let's see if this is a winner. Jared said, if Penn State could turn on one light switch to push them over the hump into the college football playoffs, what one change would that be? And conversely, what has Coach Franklin and his staff done at an elite level in their time at Penn State?
Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously the last couple of classes, maybe not what Penn State fans have wanted, but obviously they've recruited at a level that really Penn State hasn't seen in a long time, and I think you can put them in that conversation. Again, some of the classes lately, maybe not where folks have wanted them. James Franklin himself has said that's not where he wants them, but they are doing some nice things, obviously, in 2022 recruiting, and they rank very well there and have a lot of top targets left. So I would say that. I mean, look, the thing, if I understand the question correctly, Jim, the thing that, to me, it's quarterback play, right? Where else? I don't know where else to look at it. Quarterback, what is the two things you look at and say, man, if Penn State could just do X, they would be in the national championship conversation. It would be better quarterback play, more defensive line production, and more turnovers and in the secondary, and not get beat deep by deep passes. So to me, better quarterback play and more points are the best way to overcome defensive shortcomings. So if Penn State could score more, then the other two things you might be able to hide a little bit. So I don't know if the other two things improve, then you might end up just losing games, 16-13, 21-17, something like that. So to me, it's quarterback play, no question about it.
I agree with you on the quarterback play, and just to bring up something that I discussed with Ross a couple weeks ago, here's the statistic that I love from last season. 0-5 start, Sean Clifford threw 8 interceptions. 4-0 finish, he threw 1 interception.
Yep. It's amazing what difference that makes. When you don't turn the ball over, you have a chance to win. And when you do turn the ball over, you almost have no chance to win. That's what Mike Yurcich said on Saturday. He was asked, I can't remember exactly how the question was phrased, but something about, what is your focus the rest of the spring, or what things do you need to get cleaned up? And one of the things he said was ball security. And to me, Jim, he looks like a guy who knows, I think I said this earlier, he's confident in his plan, and every team has to be confident in ball security. But when your margin of error is so thin as it is, you can't win without it. So for Penn State, they turned the ball over quite a bit on offense in Saturday's practice 12 scrimmage. And that's something they have to get cleaned up, absolutely.
Okay, we have more questions to go, but do you think Jared is prize-worthy?
Yeah, I think we could just call him the winner now if you want, Jim.
Well, let's get the other questions
okay.
In. Let's be fair. Brad from Percocet says, what's Penn State's rationale for not putting the last practice on TV? I'm fine with it not being a scrimmage and almost no fans, but no TV sucks. After all, how can I get excited about the third team safety if I never see him play? And by the way, before you respond to that, Greg, earlier this week I spent half a segment ranting about exactly the point Brad is making here. I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I really didn't and do not understand it. I mean, I guess there's part of you that says when it's not on, because, James Franklin said at the start of spring practice, and the point he made was fair, Jim, that when you have these televised scrimmages, you have to be a little bit vanilla. You don't want to show too much to put things on tape for other teams. And when you're putting a new offense in, I could understand why, you would not want to do that. But at the same time, you're missing a chance to promote your program. I saw clips all over social media of Ohio State's spring game and the things that, they were putting out there about deep throws and, big plays and stuff like that, just flashy stuff. And I know Penn State shared some of that too, but I can totally understand the desire to not be on TV, Jim, and to hide some of the stuff from other schools, blah, blah, blah. But you also miss out on that excitement and that publicity factor that a lot of other schools have taken advantage of. So, I know that the fans will disagree. I don't think there's necessarily a right or wrong answer to this question. I can understand where James Franklin's coming from. I can understand where the fans are coming from. And, ultimately, they missed out on the opportunity to really showcase the program and all that. But at the same time, they were able to get a lot of practice work done that was more in tune with what, you know, they would normally do because it wasn't on TV, even though it was still in front of, you know, 7,500 people.
I'm going to disagree with you, Greg. I don't believe, well, there is an issue about good PR helping the program that way. But how about just throwing the fans a bone? It's the fans who foot the bill for all of this. They're the
right.
ones who pay the hard-earned money, you know, 100,000 strong every week in the fall. And my other question is, you were there. The game wasn't televised, okay? So they could put in some things in the game that they don't want opposing coaches to see. Tell me, you were there. What did they do that would have been a problem if an opposing coach saw it?
Yeah, that's a pretty good point too, Jim. I mean, the under center thing was obviously a little bit different than what we've seen before. And there were some other instances, I think, of things that we saw that were new. And obviously part of what, you know, what Mike Yurcich wants to do, the tempo, the way that they substitute, things like that. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, would there have been... could they have televised this game? Yes. I guess what to answer your question directly, yes. I think that they could have cut out maybe a handful of things, televised this, and not really lost anything. So, you know, I don't know. You know, again, I can understand where they're coming from with not televising it and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, it certainly probably wouldn't have made much of a difference.
And whatever it is they're hiding will be exposed quarter number one of the first game. You know, I don't get it.
You feel pretty strongly about this, don't you, Jim?
Yes, I do. Okay. I waited how many months to see some football? Here was the opportunity, and I was denied that. I don't think that's right, Greg. I'm sorry. This, you know, the fans are the ones footing the bill for the whole program. That's the way it works. James Franklin, you make $7 million because of the fans. Let them see you play. That's. I said earlier that I was done ranting. Apparently, that was
apparently
not the
not.
Case, Greg. So, and somehow I suspect it won't be the last. Let's sneak one more in. Rob from Columbus, Georgia. Could this season look like 2016, breaking in a new offensive coordinator with some tough early season losses, then a midseason resurgence and a wild win over the Buckeyes with a freshman quarterback?
Yeah, I don't want to go that far because, to me, Jim, I know we're short on time here. There's not as many proven pieces on this Penn State roster, and there's not as much depth. So could that happen? Sure, absolutely. I mean, you can make you can see a path that's there, but it's not as clear as that, you know, path was in 2016 because they're not as proven at quarterback and some other key spots as well.
The one analogy, the couple losses early could very well happen when you have Wisconsin and Auburn in September. That is it for quarter number three. And Ask Greg, stick around. In quarter number four, we're going to get T. Frank Carr in. Stay tuned for that.
In a world of over 100 hard seltzers swimming in a sea of sameness and mediocrity, a hero emerges. Introducing Seagram's Hard Seltzer, the greatest of all time. So go ahead, awaken your taste buds and bring the thrill back to bubbles with fruit-infused flavor combinations that are refreshingly new and deliciously different. Seagram's Hard Seltzer. Kick it with the goat.
Flavored malt beverages. Enjoy responsibly. The Seagram Beverage Company, Rochester, New York.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.